Thank you, Clarence. Reverend Ed, our beloved sponsor. Hi, everybody. My name is Lewis Mulhern, and I'm an alcoholic. I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. My home group is the Hill Group in Augusta, Georgia. I'm going to try to qualify by the watch. That's a little difficult, because I drank for 29 years. I thought for approximately 13 years that I had no problem with my drinking. In fact, it never occurred to me that I couldn't handle it. Of course, the longer I stay sober, the more I realize that Dr. Earl of San Francisco finally gave me the answer. And that is that all of my drinking was alcoholic from the very start. But he, when he spoke in Jacksonville, he brought up the new idea to me, and that is that you can drink as an alcoholic, but with control. Now, I didn't control it all of the time in those first 13 years. I recall almost being expelled from college because I came in late one night and I had a few drinks, and I insisted on the prefect of the hall getting up and turning on the lights for me. I banged on his door and I shouted at him, and I realized after I came into AA, and possibly sooner, that I was very fortunate that he did not get up. I know he heard me. But if he had gotten up and turned on the lights, I would have been automatically expelled, I'm sure. Then when I was 21 years old, still in college, I got mad with a girl who was not even my date. We were headed for a dance, had a little trouble, and she didn't act like I thought she should have acted. We had an accident. A classmate of mine was driving, and she wanted me to get her to the dance. She didn't want any publicity, and I wanted to stay with my friend. So he told me to go on and take her to the dance. Well, we went to the dance in the Battle House Hotel in Mobile. She was a very popular girl. All I had to do was take her on the floor, and she was launched. So what did I do? I go out to the college bootlegger, which was just around Bienville Square, buy a bottle of, they called it Satsuma Rye. That was a very pleasant name for it. It was nothing but corn whiskey colored. This was 1923 now. I go back to the Battle House Hotel and I go in the restroom and I turn that bottle up and drink it all down. I don't know how big the bottle was, I have no idea, but I know this, that I almost died of acute alcoholism because my muscles began to get rigid and I couldn't hardly move. But fortunately, I was at a dance and I started dancing and wiped that thing out. Still 21 years old, my brother was marrying a girl from Savannah, Georgia. I was finished college now. I went to his wedding, and my father attempted to instruct me about drinking. I knew all about drinking, I thought. He said, these people down here in Savannah drank differently than they're used to it. They drank all the time, any time. And he said, just don't try to keep up with them. Very sound advice. But they pulled a funny one on me, a little different type of drinking. I'd never heard of a cocktail, and I'd never drank anything with gin in it. And they started serving these things at one of the pre-wedding parties. These things that had a little pink color in them, I think. And I drank one, and it was just like drinking a Coca-Cola. So I drank another one, and for some reason or other, I passed out. I didn't intend to. And then I had my first, real blackout. They tell me, I don't remember, this kind of hazy, you know how they tell you things and you think you remember. But I was stretched across an upstairs bed with three other fellows. That's a real Irish wedding. And I came down the staircase and announced to all the assembled guests that all I want is peace. Then my wife undertook a job that she was to repeat many, many, many times. She got my sobering up business. She was the little flapper sister of the bride-to-be, and I didn't pay too much attention to her. I was an old college graduate, 21 years old, and she wasn't but 16 years old. But she was the one that took me in hand and fed me coffee, and I made a reasonable and respectable comeback, I think. I mention these to show the insidiousness of alcoholism. I had no idea. I went on from there, and I hardly touched the stuff for several years. I was ambitious. I was working for my father in the lumber business. And I went with the crowd that didn't drink. Later on, I began to go with the crowd that did drink. That was a Savannah crowd, because I was courting my bride-to-be. This drinking was fun drinking. I drank for several years before I began to drink in the mood and the manner that I realized was the real beginning of my downward path into alcoholism. In 1930, and possibly 31, this is so long ago I can't hardly remember. When the depression was getting underway and it didn't snap back overnight, and people were beginning to be seriously worried about financial matters, including me. So from occasional drinking and party weekend drinking, I made a decision to have a couple of highballs before supper each night. Little realizing, in fact, I didn't dream that this was the beginning of taking alcohol for an escape, or for medication, or a drug, but that's what it was, because it relieved my anxiety immediately. I'll try to cover the next few years rapidly. This drinking a couple of highballs before supper developed into drinking through supper into bed drunk every night in about 1 year's time, I would estimate. Now, I mean drunk. I recall that in that period there was the bedwetting. I moved to a spare bedroom. I became terribly ashamed of my drinking. I became very guilty, feeling. And then I made another brilliant decision. That is alcoholic, brilliant insanity. I decided I would take on a few drinks before I came home, and then the wife wouldn't know how much I was drinking. How stupid can you get? But that's what I did. And then I began to drink in the lower levels of human society, as our questions ask. And I call them juke joints by a little nicer name. But that descent was very, very slow, and I hardly realized what was happening. Then in 1934, when I was 32 years old, I had been raised in a Catholic environment, very spiritual, through grammar school, high school, and college. And I knew about retreats. I had been through quite a number of them. And so I decided to make a personal and private retreat back at Alma Mater, Spring Hill College in Mobile, Alabama, in that year, 1934. But typically alcoholic, I took a bottle with me. If I had had any inkling that the alcohol was my basic problem, probably I would have left it at home. But I started on this trip to Mobile by train, and I started drinking on the train from Augusta to Atlanta. I don't remember all of the details, but I know that I must have gotten more whiskey in Atlanta, because I drank that afternoon, that night, through the next day, and through the next night, approximately 40 hours of straight drinking and no sleeping. I think I made an effort at eating, I'm not sure. But when I came out of that in the Battle House Hotel, I was one sick chicken. I didn't know what to do, so I decided I'd finally call my brother, who was a doctor in Mobile. I hadn't called him up till then. So I called him, and he came over, and he recognized that I was in a highly nervous state, which I was. So I was put in a general hospital there in Mobile for nervousness. And I stayed there through that day and overnight, and then I was all right, I think. I went out to pick up the threads of this personal private retreat. I had another brother who was a priest at Spring Hill College, and I went to him, and I was ready to unload all and tell all and get straightened out, and I was serious about it. But evidently the doctor brother had phoned the priest brother, and when I got there, the priest brother said, "Don't come to me, go see one of the other fathers." Even then, I felt different and I felt outside. I made a hurried exit from Mobile, got back to Augusta, and by the way, I wired my wife that I had lost my pocketbook and that I was drawing a draft on her for $100. That was the beginning of the lying. And yet when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous many years later, that was one thing I prided myself on, that I didn't lie, that I was honest. It takes a little while to clear up for some of us. The next spring, I wrapped an automobile around an oak tree, and that was the end of the daily drinking. I didn't know I was driving. I don't know when I left this juke joint, but I went right back to drinking as soon as I could get help. And it was the first time I had been away from home all night. I had passed another milestone. I had surrendered another rule of mine. Now, I'd been getting home sometimes at 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock, but always before sunrise. You know, just occasionally, not all the time. You couldn't take it. But this was the real beginning of the spree drinking or binge type drinking, because I was so sick that the doctor had to be called when I finally got home. The doctor was an uncle of mine. Till his dying day, he never understood an alcoholic. He told me many times after he would come and puncture me when I would come off of these binges, "Look, come down to the office, I want to talk to you." Well, I'd say, he said, "I know you're shaky now, but come down in the next few days." So I'd go down to get this man-to-man talk from this uncle who wasn't 10 years older than myself, approximately 12 years old. But on very good terms. And he said, "Look, don't make a hog of yourself. Just take a couple of drinks like I did. And just let it go at that." I tried. I tried over and over and over. But it just didn't work for me. I finally went to a psychiatrist, and it's an amusing thing in one way how little we realize how secretive we are about our drinking. I had a lot of fears, especially walking on our main street. I just couldn't get on there for some reason or other. If I did get on there, I'd get panicky and have to run away. I lived with such terrible fears for so many years. So I finally broke down and went to see a psychiatrist. This was when they were first starting to have general practice patients, so to speak. That is, not general practice, but generally to the public. A few years after I sobered up in AA, I mentioned to this famous Dr. Herbie Cleckley, whom I had known. We were about the same age. And I said, "Herbie, I want you to know," this is typical of an early AA, "I want you to know that I have stopped drinking." In Alcoholics Anonymous, I was trying to carry the message. I knew his wife was an alcoholic. And he says, Lewis, I didn't know you drank. So I went to him just for fears, pure and simple, not about drinking. Or possibly I still didn't believe or wouldn't believe or avoided any admission in my own mind that drinking was a problem with me. Later on, I went to a second psychiatrist. He was an alcoholic. He still is. He's doing well in AA now after many years of floundering around. This man helped me because I was in such sad shape that I couldn't go hardly from home to office and office back to home. I had the fear of the automobile breaking down, of having a puncture, of somebody bumping into me. And I'd have to run. I didn't know what I was running from or where I was running to, but I just have to run. All these anxieties and fears built up in the mind. And I wouldn't go anywhere outside of office and home, excepting when I drank. And when I drank, I would go anywhere. No holds barred then. All of this time, I was serious about life, about taking care of my family, about making progress. I had even studied and passed the bar. In 1931, I stopped drinking to be able to study. I knew I couldn't study hard and drink. I had that much sense. Then when I passed the bar, I decided that I would just stay stopped. I would be able to build my legal career quicker and better because I was a few years late getting started. Well, we went on a little vacation after the terrible grind of the bar study and examination, and something was missing in my life. I didn't have anything to do. We were at the seashore. We called it Tybee back in those days. They call it Savannah Beach now. And I had another brilliant idea. I would drink a few bottles of beer to eat with the shrimp. And this would not be drinking. In 2 days I was drinking. And then I decided that, well, you know, drinking will help me in my legal career. I can make so many contacts that I wouldn't otherwise make. And I got right back into the same old rat race of binge-type drinking. And I am not aware now of being on a cycle. But my wife tells me that I got drunk every other Tuesday. I'm not aware of that. But I know they're coming mighty fast because I would have to take a few days to get over one. I'd have to take a few days to figure out how I could drink and get by with it. That's what was always the problem. And then I'd go into a little depression there, and I wouldn't talk to anybody. I wouldn't hear them hardly. My mind would focus right down to that drink. And that was all there was in life. I had to have that drink. Then I would start drinking and drink for a day or two. I couldn't drink very long. I'd get sick. But it was wild, crazy drinking without eating, sleeping, or going home. Another interesting feature of my drinking was that whenever I started drinking, I wanted to get away from home. But when I wanted to sober up, I wanted to get back home. I've been locked out, pushed out, invited out, and legally told to get out. The climax of all of this was, I stayed sub under that second psychiatrist almost a year. And he told me, he said, alcohol is not your basic problem. He was selling himself a bill of goods, see. But he said, you're trying to escape from life, and if you keep on trying as hard as you've been trying, he said, you're going to do it. And when you do, there won't be any return. You'll just be for the state institution. Well, that frightened me a little. I'd had the narcosynthesis treatments. I'd had the Rorschach test and the other thing. But there was only one thing that stuck in my mind. Alcohol is not your basic problem. So I talked to the wife. We went on a trip to Mobile. I started talking from the time we left Augusta, went to Mobile, and almost all the way back before I convinced her that it would be all right just to take a couple of drinks. And as soon as she said, well, she saw no reason. Her cry was to drink in moderation and in the proper environment. There was no harm in it. So that was what I was going to do. Alcohol was not my basic problem. But I stopped in Macon and bought 2 pints of old Granddad to take these couple of drinks when we got home. We got home, we had to drive all the way from Mobile to Augusta because I had this drink on my mind, a little over 500 miles. I sat down and took the couple of drinks because I sneaked a few in the kitchen, but I can see the wife now. She was standing there, dining room, ready to go up the stairs, and she said, you promised. And I looked down at the glass, and I said, yes. So I used my willpower. I quit. I went to bed, and I didn't get drunk for 3 days later. And that was the beginning of the wildest, most awful drinking in my life, of course, after I'd been sober almost a year. I'm taking up too much time. I always get into this drunk story, and I don't know, I like to tell it, but I'm taking up too much time. Needless to say, when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I was very, very sick. I didn't know how sick I was. I learned a lot in AA. I learned especially from one doctor who has passed on now, who was a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it was the first thing that really made sense to me. He said, we alcoholics are sick in body, in nerves, in our emotions, in our minds, and in our souls. He said, another thing was that this is so complicated that practically no one in the world understands alcoholism. But he said, we do know this, that Alcoholics Anonymous works if you will give it time and if you will try to follow in the footsteps of those who have made a success of it. Now, that didn't mean too much to me early in the game, but I came into AA December the 6th, 1948. A Catholic priest brought me, took me to talk to a member of AA. I didn't want to go, but I had gone to him and more or less challenged him. I said, I've had a lot of trouble with drinking. It's gone on a long time, and I don't know what to do about it. And he asked me if I'd ever taken the pledge, and I said, yes, 6 or 7 times, and it hadn't done anything. And then he asked me if I'd ever heard of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I said no, and I was filled with terror. I know now what it was, that I might have to divulge to somebody else besides a priest that I was a drunk, that somebody would know what kind of a heel I was. But anyway, I went. I had challenged him in a sense, not meaning to, but I had. And he took me and we talked with this member, and we arranged to go to a meeting. And I went to this meeting, and by now I was back in the lumber business. The legal practice didn't work out too well. And I was still had that old legal mind at work. I wanted to read the charter and the bylaws, the rules and the regulations, how much it would cost, and what I would be committed for. That was the thing. I didn't want to be committed to anything. It was very fortunate for me that we had a rather rough, tough secretary at that time. He came up to me after that first meeting and I said, "How'd you like it?" Well, I didn't know what had happened. All my mind was just hysterical. I didn't even know anybody had talked hardly. I was thinking of charter, bylaw, rules, regulations. So I started spouting out some of these things at him, and of course he didn't know what I was talking about. So he interrupted me. He said, "Let me ask you one thing." He said, "Do you want to stop drinking?" I said, "Yes." "Do you remember now?" And he handed me a white chip. I know now, and I believe now, that that was the only way I could have joined Alcoholics Anonymous. Because if I had gone away from there and tried to figure out whether I would join or not, I would have gotten drunk every time. Any serious decision that I had to make, I got drunk. I evaded it. I avoided it. My story in AA is not one of the finer ones. I got drunk in October of 49. I got drunk in March of 1950, which is my last drinking bout to this date, and I hope my last. But I was a very sick person. It took a lot of unraveling for me. I had been raised a Catholic. I had prayed, and I had done this. I had taken pledges, and everything had failed. Of course, I didn't blame God. I blamed myself. I knew basically that I was no good, and that there was not a chance for me. I knew this. And I began to mess up in AA. I did everything wrong. I did everything backwards. If they tell me to go to the right, I'd go to the left. I don't know why, but I was always that way. Even right now, if my wife says, "Suppose we stop at Howard Johnson's, I want to stop at the Holiday Inn." But if anybody tried to tell me what to do, I want to do the opposite. But there was one thing that I did do. From the very start, they told me, and I don't think it was so much them telling me, as that I didn't have any other place to go. They told me to keep coming to the meeting, no matter how black it looks, that something will rub off on you and someday you'll wake up. That is the only thing I really did that was right in AA for the first 15 and a half months. After that second drunk, as I call it, and I hope my last, in the middle of March 1950, my wife suffered a nervous breakdown. She collapsed. She couldn't take it anymore. And she was in the hospital, and I had to go see her. I was just back from the drunk house. And I wasn't in any shape to see anybody in a hospital. I was scared to death of hospitals. So I don't know what it is, but the thing just overwhelmed me. And typical alcoholic, I didn't go to my own church or the church I was raised in, but I went out to the little colored Catholic church. And I went in and I just collapsed. I cried out, "I can't go on, God, you've got to help me." And I meant that thing. I didn't have too much in the way of faith that God would help me. I didn't have much hope. But you know He has helped me all the way here. How can you thank someone for saving your life? Or giving you a chance to save your soul? God in AA. I'm so grateful. I'm so grateful that I learned the basic Christian way of life. It didn't come easy. It didn't come right away. And the peculiar part is that I learned to appreciate my neighbor who was in AA, who had helped me through these horrible times. And then I read somewhere that that was love, to really appreciate what people do for you. And then I realized a little later on that all of this was God's plan. That it was there waiting for me all the time, just waiting for me to come in and be a member of the human race. And now I know that my basic rule in AA is that when I can do something good and nice for somebody else, then I'm doing that for my God and my neighbor. Thank you.